Welcome to Hundreds of Ways, the podcast that celebrates entrepreneurship and career independence. Today's guest is me. We're going to be exploring my career as a solo developer, agency owner, and product consultant. Join us as we sit down and explore which of the hundreds of ways belongs to me.
Hey, James.
Hey, Elliot. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. So this is our first real episode. For the listeners, if you didn't check in last week, we did our episode zero, is what we called it, where we kind of gave a quick introduction to the podcast and what we're going to be doing in these coming weeks. So if you have a chance, definitely go back and listen to it. It's like 6 or 7 minutes, something like that, and it'll give you a quick introduction. But today is our first real episode, and it's going to be our first interviews. And we're going to be interviewing each other to start off. So this episode is going to be Elliot interviewing me, and then next week we'll be flipping the seats around, and I'll be interviewing Elliot. So Elliot, kick it off.
Can't wait. As I mentioned before, I'm really excited just because this is our first real episode, and as we mentioned last week, this may not be the most interesting one that we debut, but we have a lot of awesome guests lined up, and hey, I'm talking about myself, not about you. But so yeah, let's go ahead and get started. Why don't you just start by sharing what you do and what your kind of day-to-day is like over there in Spain?
Sure. So my wife and I run a company called Sane Digital. And at Sane Digital, we help non-technical founders validate, design, and develop technical products. And what we mean by that is clients typically come to us with an idea for an app or a website or a startup. We help them first kind of assess the business and the product side of it. Then we help them design that out. And then finally, we develop and help them launch the product once it's done.
Can you give me like an example of a product that you guys would launch or an app, like just kind of to make it a bit more tangible?
Sure. So right now we're actually working on a pretty big port of a company called Stationhead. They have an iOS app that's actually a super cool little app. And basically what it is you connect your streaming service, whether that's Spotify or Apple Music, and then you can use that to create a radio station. And you stream the radio out, it's live, and you can also have your voice on it. So it's a super fun product. As I've been working on it, I've gotten to kind of listen to some of these radio stations, and some of these people are just regular folks building regular radio stations they're putting together themselves, and they're super fun to listen to. So right now what we're doing is taking that, right now it's only on iOS, and we are reprogramming it in Android to release in the Google Play Store as well.
Nice, nice. And so that's a pretty specific product. That is not something that when I'm going out and prospecting in my own business looking for new work, I'm going to say I'm specifically going after that type of work. How would you, either with that project or another one, get connected to that kind of work?
So I would say the majority of our work is comes inbound, either from referrals from existing clients, or we work with a number of sales agents and with an agency that brings us high quality projects.
And obviously you have a website where a lot of people are visiting, seeing kind of what you do, the type of work you do, and that sort of thing.
We do have a site. It's not super... The site comes in later in the funnel, I would say. It's not something that's bringing the work in. It's something that we use to show our previous work. Basically, someone comes to us or we reach out to someone through outreach. Maybe we see a job posting on the web, on Craigslist, or and anywhere, and we reach out. And then the site is something that we use to kind of hook that customer after we've identified them.
To validate your offering in a way. So to take it even a further step back, I would say I've met developers who are either freelancers or run their own business all over the world. And it's one of the most versatile professions just because your only tool for most people is going to be your laptop. And you can work on your laptop from anywhere. The question is, to get there, there are quite literally, as the name would imply, hundreds of ways that you can become a developer. You can go to school, you can do undergrad, do a master's program, you can teach yourself, you can learn on the job. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the work that you do and what your path was to get there.
Just like you said, development is such a great field if you're interested in working for yourself, either as a freelancer or starting some sort of studio, because there are hundreds and hundreds of ways of getting into it. Personally, I started teaching myself to program in middle school originally, never really got off the ground with it. Tried to learn C++, which if you're familiar with the language is a really, really difficult language. It's hard to read. It's hard to understand. It's very easy to make programs that blow up when you run them. But that was back then what all games were programmed in, and I wanted to work as a video game designer. So I had to teach myself C++. It had to be C++. It couldn't be anything else.
And really quick, when you say taught yourself, to me as a non-technical founder, if you will, when I say think about teach myself, I think about going to YouTube and typing in C++. At that time, what did that look like, teaching yourself?
At that time, that looked like going to Barnes & Noble. I had my dad take me down to Barnes & Noble, which was a place that my dad and I went a lot when I was a kid. And
Some of our listeners may not even know what Barnes & Noble is.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Barnes & Noble was a bookstore, and a bookstore was physical place that sold physical books. It's a weird thing.
Our listeners should note we're recording during COVID, so the idea of a physical store is even more obsolete now than ever, but... Anyway,
oh, yeah, continue. I'm sorry. I used another word there that you probably aren't familiar with. Outside is the place that you used to go to occasionally.
So Barnes & Noble, you and your dad.
Barnes & Noble, nonfiction section. I don't think it was the Idiot series. It was not the Idiot's Guide to C++, although that existed back then.
That was big.
That was definitely, I think it was the Borland book as an old, you know, whatever. No, it was in 24 days or whatever, you know, teach yourself C++ in 24 days I went through all 24 days for sure. I remember that. And at the end of the 24 days, I knew a lot of stuff and none of it was usable, you know, none of it helped. So I started in middle school and it didn't really happen. And then I tried again in high school and it didn't really happen. And then finally in college, I picked up Python, which is, very different from C++. It's even if you can't program in it, you can kind of read it and understand a little bit about what's happening. Whereas in C++, everything looks like arcane magical symbols. And then from there, I got a job as an intern at a game studio in Phoenix, 2XL Games. They were kind enough to employ me, even though I had no idea what I was doing. I built the Facebook login for our racing game. And then after that, I was in university for psychology for 3 years, switched to computer science, decided I didn't like the computer science curriculum, so I switched to mathematics, ended up with a math degree, and then left school without graduating, left the semester early, and moved to Las Vegas with a couple of friends.
Can I just interrupt you there for a second? Yeah. You're saying you switched majors 3 times, got through 3.5 years of undergrad, and then left a semester early without graduating.
Well, 4.5 years of undergrad before.
Four. Yeah. As one does.
But yes, I had a project that I had worked on that summer with some friends that they took to Techstars, which is a startup incubator, if you're not familiar. And they had taken it to Techstars and gotten some initial funding and then moved to Las Vegas as part of the downtown project, which was a project from the founder of Zappos trying to turn Vegas into a tech hub. And so... I moved to Vegas and was lead engineer, first engineer at the robotic startup. And yeah, just, you know, had like, I think I had one credit left and I, you know, figured I'd take it later online, which I did. But yeah, I had to go. So I left and then went to Vegas. And that was my first, you know, real programming job. The job at 2XL was more of an internship and was definitely a lot of learning. Whereas at Remotive, I was... you know, building the Android app, building the iOS app, all that kind of stuff.
What was that like leaving school with one credit left, but you had such an amazing opportunity on the table? Was that intimidating or were you just kind of caught up in all the excitement that you thought that was the only way to go at the time?
Yeah, I've always had this opinion that things that are transition periods in your life, and school to me is a transition period where there's this terminal point and you're working towards it. When you arrive at that point, which for me, school, the point of it is to get a job. And when you can get a good job, then school's over. So when that opportunity came, it was time to go.
Right. Totally makes sense. So let's just continue on this journey here. You ended up working there for how long?
I was only at Remotive for about a year. Startup time goes quickly. And then I
can attest to that.
Yeah. A year is a very long time, especially at a 0 year old startup. A lot changed. You know, we went from being four of us, to 20 when I left. And that, you know, again, in a year. So, you know, just things go quickly in startup land. So I left and started freelancing for a bit, but really just kind of helping a friend there with in Vegas with a project they were working on, and really just buying time. I wasn't planning on freelancing full time. And then after that, ended up at Google in New York for 3 years.
And how did you get over to New York from being out in Vegas? Was it just for the job?
Yeah, we obviously wanted to get out of Vegas. Las Vegas is not the greatest place to live. And the downtown project was definitely an interesting experiment, but it wasn't coming together in the way that Tony had hoped that it would. So we knew we wanted to go somewhere. We weren't super jazzed about San Francisco. We had a lot of friends in New York. So a friend of mine referred me to the Google office there, and I went through the whole multiple interview, multiple weeks of phone calls process with Google. And then 3 months after probably my first conversation there, got the offer and we decided to move.
Fantastic. And if I remember correctly, that was your last, what I would refer to as kind of full-time corporate job before starting your own company, Sane Digital. Can you kind of walk us through what your 3 years there were like? What was your experience like? I know so many people who start their own company who have a terrible experience at their job, and that's kind of the impetus for them to leave. And some people love it, but they just know that they've always been called to do their own thing, and that's kind of what started. What caused you after your 3 years there to move on to the next thing? What was that driving factor?
It was definitely more of the second. Google's a great place to work. It has the necessary trappings of a big corp job where, you know, things move slow. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of politics. There's 24 teams involved in any single initiative, and you're never really sure who's in charge. You know, all of those things are very true about Google. But it, as big corp goes, it's a fantastic place to work. Towards the end of my second year there, I was working on a project that was a really big deal. It was bringing in, I think we brought in like $30 million a quarter, one quarter with it. And we were getting a lot of attention from some of the higher ups. And then that project ended. And that kind of wave of energy crashed. And it was instantly like, okay, cool, we'll now go find the next one. And that moment of all these great things are happening. Oh, we're doing all this great work. And now, okay, well, none of that work really mattered. Now we've just got to find the next one. And being just kind of a cog in that machine felt very draining to me. And I missed having that sort of hands-on, this is your project, you and maybe a couple other people. Everything you do is going to be fundamental to how the project develops. That is something that you're not going to feel at a big company like that. So I started working on the side at first, just kind of 10 to 20 hours a week doing iOS consulting, helping other freelancers who are already doing freelancing with their apps. And then finally got to a point where I decided, hey, you know what? I'm actually having way more fun and making about the same amount of money doing this stuff on the side as I am at my day job. I should just probably do the stuff on the side instead. So yeah. So I left.
And how long did that take from the point you started doing some side work to feeling really confident that you were actually bringing in enough income to live off of and make that leap?
That is a good question. I don't think I've measured that. I want to say it's between 6 and 9 months probably, which is a function of the industry for sure. Especially even still, and especially in 2015, there's so much tech work out there. There's so many people that need help with apps, with websites, all that kind of stuff. It's easy to get that initial footing under you.
For sure. And when you, when you started kind of doing that side hustle, that freelance work, was that always in the back of your head? Like, this is ultimately going to be what I want to do full time? Or was it just something you were doing to stay busy and keep yourself, you know, sane, more or less?
Definitely that. When I started it, I don't think I had any idea of... When I started, I was pretty serious about staying at Google for quite a while. I had this idea in my head that I was going to be there for a long time. I started to even look at going to business school at NYU Stern. I had some people there that were going to help recommend me, which that would have been a disaster. So me going back to school is probably not a good idea. But no, it was definitely not a part of the big plan. It was definitely, hey, this is an opportunity. Oh, hey, now this is some extra money. Oh, actually, this is a way better use of my time. Maybe I should make this switch.
So we've talked a little bit about what you currently do. We touched on that briefly, and we'll get to that more later. But this pivotal moment of moving from a corporation into being completely independent of anybody else paying your monthly paycheck, that's a big move for a lot of people. And that's often what holds up their ability to kind of take that next step in career independence, career freedom. What can you just talk through what that was like? Your decision to leave Google was an easy one that popped in your head one day, and the next day you gave your notice, or was it something you thought about for a while? And then once you did do it, what was the process like? I mean, did you just build a website, start? Just kind of walk us through that process.
I don't remember exactly that moment when I said, okay, I'm going to leave, I'm going to do this independently. I do remember playing with that idea for a while. I definitely had a good few months there where I was continuing to do this on the side and had begun to think about, well, what would it look like if I did this full time? I don't remember exactly how long it was, but it definitely was kind of that, you know, something would, a bad day would happen at work like they do, and the reaction would be, well, I don't really have to be here. And that probably went on for a while. Once I actually made the decision then to go talk to my manager and that conversation happened, it was super liberating. Everything kind of just fell into place. And, you know, even my actual work at my job, probably that 2 weeks felt like I was doing a better job. I was more energized when I went into meetings because I knew, you know, hey, this is kind of my last month here. It's my last little chunk of contribution to a company that I did really, really enjoy working for. Having made that decision really, really opened things up for me. Now, let's fast forward about a month to those last couple of days where I'm really starting to realize, okay, I'm not going to come back here on Monday. That's when things got a little scary again. And especially like I can very vividly picture in my mind the walk out of the building on Friday afternoon. I took a picture by the Google sign in the lobby, and I even kind of remember Steffi, my wife, and I took an Uber home, and I can remember the drive even. I saw Kelsey Grammer walking. I remember that. It was a very weird like coincidence, but I remember that whole little, you know, I don't know, it's Manhattan, so it was like probably a 100-yard drive. But it, like, all the little details are painted there because it was such a big, big deal. But then Monday came, and instead of going to Google, I went to a co-working space with a friend of mine who I had actually been working with doing iOS work, and life went on.
And that brings us to the present, more or less. That's what you've been doing ever since leaving Google, correct?
Yeah, the different shades, but for sure, since leaving Google, pretty much 95% of my time has been building apps for clients. So clients come with ideas and I build them.
So between those first couple of days out, you're going to that co-working space in Manhattan to today while you're living in Spain with your family, and recently welcomed a second child to the family. Super exciting. But tell me a little bit about what that evolution has been like, learning and going through what it's like to run your own business. Because you hadn't done it before. That was the first time ever. So from that Monday to now, what are some of those key learnings that you've kind of identified in your space?
So I had run businesses before, but it's different.
Right. What I was saying more is like, this is, everything's on the line when you leave your job like that in a way. And another thing we kind of chatted about, which I'd like to kind of loop back and incorporate into the question, is like, what was on the line for you? What did you have to make happen in order to keep this dream, which was now a reality, afloat? Was there, did you have a runway that you were able to kind of work off of, or did you need to hit the ground running and within a week kind of make ends meet in order for this to continue being a reality?
So thanks to the work that I've been doing on the side, I did have a little bit of extra cash saved up. And that is something that I always recommend to anybody who's talking about making this leap towards freelancing, or hey, I want to leave my day job, I want to try this other thing. Start before you leave. It's even if you're only working 5 to 10 hours a week, even if you just take, if you just work Saturdays for a couple months and just that one extra day for a couple of months, you can save up, a few weeks at least of your living expenses. And that makes a huge difference. That said, having a runway can also mean that you are going to burn through that runway trying to figure out what you need to do. And if it's your first time in business for yourself, you're going to inevitably spend time on things that aren't important. And having a runway can mean that you're going to spend more of that time doing those things because you're fine, you're safe.
You don't have that same fire under you that you would have if you literally needed to pay your rent in 6 days and figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, exactly. And that fire, it changes your decision-making process, right? So, a lot of people be like, oh, well, I want to start a business. I want to go into freelancing. Okay, I need a website and I need business cards and I need a logo and I need if you got to pay rent in 3 days, your business cards aren't going to make a difference. What you need is to go sell something, right? Go sell your services, go sell your time. And that's something, again, for people who are thinking about making this change, the most important thing is that you start the work, right? That you go sell, that you go find a project on Craigslist, or you meet somebody who needs something, or you reach out to friends, and that you actually start doing the work. That is the first and most important thing. The moment that you get paid for work that you're doing yourself is the moment that you're actually an entrepreneur. Before that, anything you do before that is practice.
I think that's a really good point, because for a lot of people, your note about starting while you're at your current job is so important, but at the same time, then it protects a safety net. And you can go building a business plan for 5 years if you want while you're at your other job. You have nothing that is really pushing you off the ledge to really start. And that's such a key point. Execution is everything. You just need to go sell that product, sell that service, sell that time, because until you do that, you're not even freelancing. You're just dreaming.
Yeah, for sure. And if you some people make the excuse of, well, I can't do that while I'm at my job, but I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. I don't, it's going to be too hard. If you can't figure out over the course of a month or two while you're at your job how to do this safely, right? Because you have, like you just said, you have this safety net, you have the ability, you can write that 5-year business plan while you're working full time. If you're not comfortable doing that on nights and weekends to start, oof, you're going to be a lot more frightened when you've got 2 weeks of rent money left, right? So, there's something to be said about when you have that net under you, taking the risks.
So looping back to the present moment now, you have been running this business for quite some time. You're past that point of needing to worry about that initial runway of what it's like, of all those kind of initial fears that a lot of entrepreneurs or new business owners feel right away. You, I would say, have quite a few experiences in the entrepreneurial field under your belt. So why don't you just give me a rundown of kind of now what your life looks like on a day-to-day basis, running Sane Digital and the other endeavors that you're involved in?
One of the things about being a freelancer or an agency owner or any kind of entrepreneur is that even though you have successes and the challenges of day one go away, eventually you get that first project, eventually you learn how to find clients on a regular basis, eventually you have people coming to you instead of you having to go out and find everyone. But the thing about being an entrepreneur is that the challenges change. They never go away. So yeah, you're past this initial phase where you have no idea how to sell anything, right? You're past this initial phase where you have no idea where to find projects. But now you have the challenge of, okay, well, how do I build a system that allows me to do client work and sell at the same time? Because that's tough, right? Like splitting that time. How do I have a system so that when clients come to me, I have a process for validating that they're even able to work with me? A lot of times you'll, especially in tech, you get people who, you know, are super, super driven to build the next Facebook/YouTube/Snapchat, except for it's going to be on toaster ovens and they have $5,000 and they need it done on Monday.
And it's for your dog.
Yeah. And it's for your dog. And so, you know, that is a challenge that you probably won't have day one, that you might have day 10. And so the challenges keep changing. So that's something to keep in mind with this stuff, is that, you know, it gets easier in that you get used to it, but it also gets different every day. And so there's always something new that you have to be working on. There's something new you have to be thinking about.
Adaptability is crucial, is kind of how I would sum that up from my own perspective.
And 2020 is a perfect example of adaptability is crucial, right? Like, so this is a fun story. Elliot and I were sitting in Javier together here near where I live in Spain. The 14th or 15th of March, I think 16th. The 16th was the day that we went into lockdown here. And, you know, we were talking and making plans for the next week that never happened, that never remotely happened because of coronavirus. And, you know, if you have a full-time job and something like this pandemic hits, yeah, your life changes. You know, now you've got to work from home. You got to figure out what to do with your kids, maybe all that stuff. But that's not that big of a change. If you, on March 15th, relied on your business coming from in-person conferences, there's not going to be one this year. So that's the sort of thing that when you're an entrepreneur, you really, really have to be adaptable to an extreme, extreme, extreme level.
Oh my gosh. I have a friend who literally her entire business is she runs 3 conferences a year. And they are spread around. They're spread around the world, one in Asia, one in Europe, and one in North America. And that is her entire business model. So I've been reaching out to her just like, what are you doing this year? And that is the key term that keeps coming up, is it's all about adaptability, flexibility, being able to be dynamic and react to these situations creatively and without stressing out and freaking out too much. Because if you just freak out, you're not going to be able to figure out a path forward.
And that's something that you get better and better at, I would say, or at least I have. I think when you come into this, you have a very narrow vision of what you want to do and what you can do. And as you get better at this, as you have more experience, you start to realize, like, you know, I always tell my clients, look, I'll do pretty much anything you want me to. I'm just going to charge you for it. So you have to figure out if it's going to be the best use of my time. If you want me to change the copy on your website, I'll do that. I'm going to charge my usual development rate, which is a lot more than the copywriting rate that I think a lot of people charge. So that's part of, you know, the flexibility. Part of your question, sorry, we went off on a
tangent. Yeah, we did a little bit there. But it's good. I think it's all super relevant. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so the other thing you asked about was like day-to-day life. And the entire reason I would say that I do any of the stuff that I do is for the day-to-day life that it gives me. I have an extremely flexible life because of my work. I, you know, work hard and I have a lot of things I have to get done in a day. But whether I get that done at 6 in the morning or at noon or 6 at night or at midnight, it doesn't really matter. For my line of work, I'm especially lucky in that my clients don't typically wake up until at least midday because most of my clients are in the United States. So I have a wonderful half of the day that I get to just, you know, completely, they're sleeping. My clients are sleeping, so I can just work and not worry about having to be in communication. On the personal front, that affords me a really great lifestyle. I spend an hour and a half to 2 hours a day in the gym Monday through Friday. I can take my son or now my son and daughter to the beach on a Tuesday at noon when no one's there, and it's not a problem. our first year that we lived here in Spain, I think we were out of the, not out of the country, but out of our home 6 months out of the year. So we spent more time traveling, whether that was in Spain or somewhere else in Europe, than we did at our apartment that we were renting. And that's all only possible, even remotely possible, because of this path that I've taken.
It all sounds amazing from that perspective. But what were some of the kind of the challenges that you ran into executing on that lifestyle? I mean, from me, my personal experience, I love working from Europe because I'm most productive in the morning. And like you, a majority of my clients are in the U.S. So that means I have 6 uninterrupted hours in the morning that I can crank out work and get everything done before I need to start hopping on calls or getting into meetings. What kind of challenges are there from living that lifestyle in relationship to the work that you do?
One of the biggest challenges with remote work in general, with any time that you're working with a client that's not where you are, is the sales process. Not all clients, not all prospective clients, but a good portion, you know, want someone local. They want, if they're in New York, they want to work with someone in New York, or they at least want to work someone with in the Eastern time zone, or at the very least, they want to work with someone in the U.S. And so we lose a fair number of prospective clients just to our location. That said, when you work remote, you also are open now to larger markets because you're open to all of them. And so we can work with anyone in the U.S. We can work with anyone in the U.K. We can work with anyone in Europe. We've had clients that are back and forth between the U.S. and Australia. So, you know, there are pros and cons to that. But that's definitely been one of the biggest challenges, is sometimes, you know, where we are in Alicante, we're a hour and a half flight from the nearest European international airport. And then from there, we're a 6-hour flight to the nearest American international airport. And if that person that we're going to see isn't in New York or Philadelphia, well, now we're another 5-hour flight from them, right? So that adds up. And that can definitely be a challenge.
So I think one of the really unique moments of the time that we're in right now is I spent the better part of 2019 being pretty quiet about my location independence. When I was actually in the sales process with a client, I would very in-depth explain how it worked, but it wasn't something I would outwardly promote in kind of external marketing materials and whatnot. Now, with COVID and how so much has shifted online, obviously Twitter and Facebook and a lot of other tech companies have announced more jobs going remote. I anticipate that this is going to be a trend that we're seeing, and pretty obviously it already is. And that's actually going to be less of a disadvantage moving forward, would be my hope. So many people are going to be able to take advantage of this remote lifestyle, whether it's from their own freelancing business or entrepreneurial venture, or just working for a typical corporation, that they are going to be kind of having access to a whole new way of life that just 6 months ago wasn't even a thought. So that's kind of unique to think about. And I also am curious how that's going to affect sales moving forward and how people think about working with external partners. So just a note there, and excited to see how that evolves.
One of the reasons why we finally, you know, made this podcast, you know, actually got it out of just talking and said, okay, let's actually get this out, is 2020 is a huge year for change. And there is so much that, one of the great things about moments in time like this, and there is tragedy involved in this time too, so I don't want to play it up too much, but one of the things about big shifts is that they give you cover to make your own changes. And so things that may have seemed impossible 6 months ago or 4 months ago even, now, I mean, do you have a choice, right? You can go out and make huge changes to your life because everything is changing. And that cover can give you personal, and you know, one of the things you're going to get when you decide, hey, I'm going to leave my 9-to-5 and go freelancing is that your family, especially your parents probably, no matter how old you are, your parents are going to go, you're going to do what? And now if you say, hey, instead of working for one company in my pajamas on my couch during the day. I'm going to work for a couple companies on my couch in my pajamas. That's a lot easier argument to make to your family.
In terms of challenges when it comes to entrepreneurship, that can be a rabbit hole we could go down for hours, if not days. There are all sorts of big challenges that come up for entrepreneurs in every field, and it varies across the spectrum. For you, sales is obviously one of them based on the remote nature of your work. But let's pivot a little bit and talk about pros, because we could also go all day on that. What are some of your kind of best memories or memorable moments from you running your own business?
One of my favorite things that I think about when I left Google, I was working with a friend of mine, Sam Kaufman. And before Sane Digital, I had a different agency that was called Gradient. And it was Sam and I. And Sam and I worked together in a co-working space in the Lower East Side called Projective, and it was really fun. We had kind of just, you know, the shared desk type situation in the middle of the room. But as we started getting more clients and started needing more kind of, you know, private space and really less distraction, Projective was a lot of fun, but it was not the best place to work. We moved to a co-working space that had just opened in Gowanus, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn. And we moved into that co-working space. They were behind schedule on their construction. So they finished our office, our three-desk office that we had, because we had another person that had joined us at that point. They finished our three-desk office, and it was, you know, my first real office. Like, you know, never at 2XL, at Remotive, and at Google, you know, everything was open plan. At Remotive, we worked in apartments because we were a super cool startup. And so this was my first like office, you know, we had a door that closed and, but it was hilarious because it was the three of us in this construction site. Like the rest of the building wasn't even like remotely done. And so, that's one of my favorite memories because it was just so, you know, one of the things that I like about, freelancing, about entrepreneurship, about startups is there's this element of the Wild West. And there's really nothing that gets that plucky, self-made entrepreneur feel more than literally working at a desk inside of a construction site. So that's one of my favorite memories. It was just a lot of fun.
I think in the startup world, that validates the I've made it kind of part, you know, like, okay, I am officially a startup person now because I'm working in a construction site.
Yeah, is us and our really be. I mean, they did a fantastic job, and it, of course, you know, about a month later, the rest of it was finished. But and it was gorgeous when they were done. But it's like us working in this little tiny glass bubble, and there's just, you know, construction dudes, like big, you know, men with stains on their shirts, carrying, you know, metal beams and things like that. And it was just such a funny.
It's your typing, you know, away on your laptop.
Yeah, here's three little nerdy boys in a room, you know, coding Android and iOS apps, and behind us are the real men building buildings. So that's definitely one of my favorite memories. Since then, you know, we've gotten Steffi and I have gotten to do so many great things. We've gotten to spend so much time with our kids because of our lifestyle. I think I've spent, you know, more time with Teo than not my parents' fault, but just they had careers. So, you know, I think I've spent more time with Teo in these last 4 years of his life than my parents maybe did with me in the first 10, just because Teo is with me almost all the time.
If it wasn't clear, Steffi is James's wife, yeah, and Teo is his son.
Yes, I love to drop names without anyone having context. And so, you know, that's something that, again, just wouldn't be possible, even if I was working at a company with generous flex time, generous paternity leave, all those sorts of things. It's just not even comparable to when you work for yourself, the flexibility you have. And then on the kind of, you know, more glamorous travel front and stuff, like I said, that first year we were here in Spain, we spent a year in Mallorca, which is a gorgeous island in the Mediterranean. We went to Paris, we went to Barcelona, you know, all these really fantastic places. We spent a month in Montpellier, France. We did intensive French lessons from, I think, like 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then would get out. Steffi would go pick up Teo. We had this French babysitter that only spoke French to him, which was fantastic. And then I would leave, you know, and go to a coffee shop and work from 1 to 6 p.m., 7 p.m. So, again, you know, things that just aren't, are not possible if you're not working for yourself.
Wow, so that all sounds incredible. To me, when I imagine sitting in a cafe in Paris, it doesn't sound that cheap to me. How are you guys able to enable actually living that lifestyle and cruising around these different parts of Europe? What does that look like from a financial perspective?
It's a great question. I think that there's a, you know, an idea when you see these, when you see people on Instagram that are, you know, posting their photos from Santorini one weekend and their photos from Paris from another weekend, that, oh, this costs a ton of money. And it can cost a ton of money. But again, get on this flexibility point, travel can be relatively affordable if you're flexible. So that means not traveling on the exact dates that you want to go, but on the dates that flights are less expensive. For us, one of the things we did when we went to Montpellier is we rented out our apartment here, and we were in Valencia at the time. So we had someone come live, literally, I think they stayed with us. We were like eight of us in our two-bedroom apartment, because I think I'm counting dogs to get to eight, but they came and stayed with us for a couple of days, and we showed them around Valencia, a really fantastic family from New Zealand. And then we got in the car and drove off to France, and we're there for a month staying in an Airbnb. So, you know, we were offsetting that cost with some income from our apartment, and we drove to Montpellier, right? So that's another thing, right? If you move to Europe, it's a lot cheaper to travel in Europe, right? Because for us, it's a 5-hour drive instead of, you know, a half day plane journey. So on this flexibility front, you know, if something that you've always wanted to do is travel the world, yeah, that's really expensive to do if you work 9 to 5 and you live in Manhattan and you're spending your 2 weeks of vacation time going to different cities around the globe. But if you quit that job and you take your stuff out of that apartment and put it in storage or sell it or you know, get rid of it somehow, it's not that expensive to fly from New York to Lisbon. And it's not that expensive to live in Lisbon for a month. And then it's not that expensive to go from Lisbon to Madrid. And it's not that expensive to live in Madrid for a month. If you have that flexibility, you can enable, you know, a quote unquote glamorous lifestyle without spending a glamorous amount of money.
All right, James, so you've sold me. I'm ready to start. I'm listening to this podcast and I want to do exactly what you do. I want to move my family to the Mediterranean coast and start my own business. Where do you recommend I start as somebody who knows nothing about development and don't even know a single code language?
If what you want to do is learn to code, there's never been a better time in history maybe to learn anything. There are so many fantastic resources out there. I haven't looked at anything that's come out in the last couple of years. I used to recommend really highly Team Treehouse. I really liked their lesson style, and they teach you, in my experience, pretty actionable tools, things that you can actually go use and start selling. The biggest thing with learning to code, and for me it's the biggest thing with anything in freelancing, is to not get bogged down by the choices, especially in tech, but in anything in entrepreneurship, you're going to, when you go out and say, okay, now I'm going to do this, suddenly you're going to go, okay, but what am I going to do? Am I going to, let's just focus on tech. Am I going to do web apps? Am I going to do websites? Am I going to do Android applications? Am I going to do iOS applications? Okay, now I've decided I'm going to do iOS applications, but what's this React Native thing? Is that something I should know about? One of the questions that I get asked the most by people who are trying to make this transition to development is, hey, what language do I need to learn? What platform do I need to learn? And the correct answer is whichever one interests you, whichever one you have access to learning materials for. Right now, you can make a living building React web applications. You can build Android applications. You can help people with their websites. Really, the important thing is that you learn a technology and that you then learn how you can go sell that technology.
One of the most daunting parts of this isn't learning the language per se or isn't starting the business, but it's everything all at once. If you look at it as I want to go from point A, which is where I am, for example, in your situation in a Manhattan apartment working at a corporation, to bringing my family to Spain and living in Spain. There's so much that happens in between there. So building out an actionable list of things that you want to start doing and associating some timelines with it, you're not going to hit all those dates, but just breaking it down into parts that you can actually check off a list for per se is going to be really valuable, because then it's not going to appear as one impossible mountain to climb, but just little portions that you have to chip away one part at a time. For me, at least, that was one of the most valuable things to get started, because it was just so daunting to say, I'm going to go start my own business versus, all right, I'm going to teach myself how to do this and start freelancing on the side and then start saving up money here and have things come together more progressively in that manner.
On that front, there's a book that I highly, highly recommend. And it's called The One Thing.
Ooh, I've never heard about this. Please. This might be next on my reading list.
So the book is written by Gary Keller, who's the founder of Keller Williams. It's a real estate firm. And the crux of The One Thing is that this the to-do list can be daunting because you have, 10 things on them. And that typically people get bogged down and, okay, well, should I do this one? Should I do this one? What's the priority? But if you had to answer the question of what is the one thing that will push things forward, it gets a lot easier. And like Elliot just said, if you want to become an independent developer and move to Spain, that's a big to-do list. But if you go, okay, well, what's the first thing I need to do? If you don't know how to code, that's the first thing, right? The first thing is get the skill. If you do know how to code, okay, well, then I would say your next first thing is find a project. Okay, but how do I find a project? Well, the first thing would be to go look for people who need work, to reach out to people who are friends who might have projects that they need done. If you know anybody who's coding, some of my first projects were working for other freelancers, doing basically helping them out with their excess work. And so I'll link the book in the liner notes. I think it's a fantastic book for anyone, even if you're not a freelancer or entrepreneur. But especially in this line of work where every day you're going to wake up and you're going to be greeted with a laundry list of things that you could do. Having a system that helps you figure out which one of those is the one you're going to do is super helpful.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think my current laundry list is over 100 things long. So that prioritization, understanding what actually needs to get done, while also taking actionable steps towards some of those longer term goals, is not only going to be essential for you launching your own business, but in your day-to-day execution of what you do. I mean, you're how many years in, and you're still playing that game of balancing what needs to get done right now and what's on that longer term docket. So if you can get it squared away right from the start, more power to you.
And sometimes you might need help doing that. You might need help, Elliot's 100 items. If you're not used to a 100 item to-do list, it can be tough to get through it the first time. So that's one of the reasons we're doing this podcast, and our emails are on the site. I'm james@hundreds.ofways.com. If you need help figuring out how you're going to make this plunge, send me an email and we'll talk.
Well, I was about to make a plug for our social channels. Reach out to us on social media at Hundreds of Ways. We're on Twitter and Instagram, and just shoot us a DM and we'd love to talk. We're always interested to talk to entrepreneurs and just hear about what they're doing. And we may not have the best advice in your field or vertical, but we're well connected in so many industries and would love to do what we can to help out.
For sure.
So we could keep going here for another hour about ways to get started, but I think if you want to reach out to us directly, we're happy to provide some one-on-one insight via email or social media. Shoot us a DM and we're happy to chat. We love talking to entrepreneurs who are either in the stages of launching their own business or even thinking about it. So reach out in that way. But also, I think we're just going to get so many new and unique perspectives from the folks that we bring on. And through that, you'll hear about some of our own learned experiences as well. So as I said, we could keep going for an hour about how to get started, but that's what this is all about moving forward. So plenty more to come on that front. James.
Elliot.
Congrats on episode one.
Thank you very much for being our host today.
Thank you for being our guest. Excited to continue this journey. And thanks, everybody, for listening. It's been fun figuring out how this works and excited to keep going.
Next week, we will be flipping the script. Elliot will be sitting in the guest chair and I'll be hosting. And we're going to be talking to him about his life. So please subscribe to the podcast if you enjoy this episode. And next week, we'll be talking to Elliot.
Can't wait. Looking forward, James. We'll chat soon. Cheers.